Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. A small cut in your arm or groin, a wire, and a teeny tiny balloon. What do these three things have to do with stopping a heart attack in progress? They're part of a minimally invasive medical procedure known as angioplasty, a method of quickly restoring blood flow to the heart that has revolutionized the treatment of heart disease. Before angioplasty was introduced in 1977, open heart bypass surgery was the only way to clear a blocked artery.
Joining us to describe angioplasty, how it works, what's involved, and who is a good candidate for the procedure is Dr. Amar Krishnaswamy, an interventional cardiologist in the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. He's board certified in internal medicine, cardiology, and interventional cardiology. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
We always like to start at the beginning so we have a full understanding. And in this case, would you just give us a brief description of angioplasty? What is it? What does it accomplish?
Sure. So angioplasty is a bit of a historical term. It describes the use of balloons in the coronary arteries, which are the arteries that supply blood flow to the heart. And again, the use of those balloons to open up narrowings. The term that we use more contemporarily is percutaneous coronary intervention, or PCI. And that's a bit more of a specific term because it describes things like the use of balloons, other devices, and the placement of stents, which are small metal scaffolds that help to keep the artery open once we've opened it up with a balloon.
So who's getting this procedure?
So there are a few different situations in which we perform PCI. Most often, it's because patients are having angina or chest discomfort that is a signal that the heart muscle is not receiving enough blood supply when they exert themselves. Some patients don't actually have this chest pressure or chest burning, but instead may have more shortness of breath or other symptoms that signal a physician that there could be a problem with the heart. The other common scenario in which this procedure is performed is when patients are actually having a heart attack. And that's usually a signal of a more serious narrowing or blockage, sometimes even a complete blockage in the artery.
What determines whether or not the stent will be placed or a balloon will be used or another device?
The most common scenario is one in which there is a narrowing in the artery, that we open up the narrowing to some degree using a balloon, which just makes it easier for us to see the artery and to place our devices. And again, most commonly, a stent is placed. When angioplasty first began in the late 70s and early 80s, stents did not exist, and so patients had angioplasty or balloon inflation alone. But those procedures had a significant complication and a rate of the artery re-narrowing of up to 50 or 75%. In the 1990s, metal stents were developed to help prop open the artery as sort of a scaffold. And we found that with the use of those earlier generation stents, the rate of a re-narrowing in that same segment was about 20 to 30%. With the current generation of stents that we use, that rate of re-narrowing has been reduced to anywhere between 5 and 8 or 10%. So a substantial improvement in these results. So most often we place a stent.
So the stents continue to be metal. And when you talk about re-narrowing, what would be that time frame?
The stents remain inside the patient forever. If any re-narrowing occurs, it tends to occur within approximately the first year or so. And if that does happen, usually that patient requires another procedure where we either place balloon within that stent to open it up a little bigger, or sometimes we need to put in another stent within it.
Doctor, how risky is this procedure?
It's evolved very well over the last few decades, with both equipment becoming safer and easier to use and operators, of course, having more experience. So overall, when we talk about these procedures, we say that the risk of a major complication is far less than 1%. And what those complications include are either some kind of a tear in the artery at the heart or a complication that could require emergency open heart surgery, a stroke, or unfortunately sometimes not making it out of the procedure. Now, those are extremely rare circumstances, far less than 1%, usually far less even than 0.5%. But depending on how sick the patient is or other certain factors, a specific patient may have more or less of a risk than someone else.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking about angioplasty, and right now we're discussing the risks involved. Explain to us what a patient can expect. I understand it's not outpatient, I hope. And what about recovery time? What's involved after a stent is placed?
Well, it actually is often an outpatient procedure. And so, as I described, there are two specific scenarios most often in which patients have stenting or angioplasty done. In the first scenario, when people are having symptoms, but they're not having a heart attack, they usually come into the hospital that morning, the day of their procedure. The way in which we do the procedure is we bring them to what's called a catheterization laboratory, a cath lab. They usually receive some pain medication and some sedative medication through the IV, although they are still mildly awake or in sort of a twilight zone during the procedure. We give them some local anesthetic medication, just like when patients go to the dentist, at the site where we put in the catheter. And that most commonly is either the artery at the wrist or the artery at the top of the thigh. Once they're anesthetized and comfortable with the IV medication, we place a small tube into the artery that essentially is like an IV. But instead of an IV, which goes into the vein, this little catheter goes into the artery. The catheter is about 2 millimeters in diameter, so relatively small. And from there, we place our longer catheters that we thread through these arteries up to the heart. We do this under an X-ray machine, and we direct the catheters up to the heart. Once we've gotten the catheters up to the heart, we inject some dye into the heart arteries, and that's what allows us to visualize the different heart arteries and see whether there's a narrowing or a blockage in one of them. Once we identify the narrowing or the blockage, we place a little wire. It's a very thin wire. It's about 0.014 inches in diameter, so all these things that I'm discussing are quite small. We place this wire down the artery, and that serves as sort of a train tracks for us, if you will, to push the balloons and the stents down to our area of interest. Once we've opened up the artery and, as I said, most often placed a stent, all the tubes come out of the artery at the wrist or the artery at the leg where we've gone in. And sometimes we use a little suture or a little plug to close up the hole in the artery. And sometimes we just have to hold pressure on the artery for a few minutes to close it up. Specific patients have specific treatments. Overall, the procedure takes us anywhere between 30 minutes and 1.5 hours. Again, just depending on the different complexities of the situation. And if it's an outpatient procedure where the patient is comfortable and doing well, they may leave later that evening, or they may spend the night and leave the next morning.
Since this procedure is restoring blood flow, I would imagine that the patient feels much better rather quickly?
Usually they're able to feel relief from their symptoms almost right away. If they are patients with symptoms of chest discomfort or shortness of breath that they were having with exertion, they may notice relief from symptoms the next day or the day after once they start exerting themselves again. If it's a patient who came in with a heart attack, so they came in having chest pain just sitting or lying there in one place, they usually feel relief the moment the balloon and the stent are across the artery.
And then is there medication that a cardiac patient would take? What kind of follow-up instructions do you give them once they leave?
I usually like to see my patients in a very short time period after we've done the procedure, within the first couple of weeks, just to make sure they're feeling okay, that the site where we went in has healed properly, and most importantly, to understand if they're able to tolerate the different medications that they've been given. Most often, patients after a stent will need to be on at least a baby aspirin for the rest of their lives, and they'll need to be on another medication called Plavix or a substitute for Plavix called Effient or Brilinta. These are medications that are similar to aspirin, but help the patient until the stent has healed properly, which can take anywhere between 1 month and 1 year, depending on the type of stent that we've used. Additionally, patients will often be on medications to control cholesterol, medications to control blood pressure, things of that nature, just to make sure and guard against this happening again in the future.
I appreciate the fact that you've described this using the image of the scaffolding, because I'm married to a building engineer and I know that a scaffolding is only a temporary structure. In other words, there probably have to be lifestyle changes, because you're less likely to have reclosing of an artery if you limit the risk factors that caused it in the first place. So what are the changes that most patients would have to make?
I think that's a really important point for patients to understand. Because the stent procedure that I described, again, it's often an outpatient procedure and it's relatively quick and the patients don't really feel very much. And so oftentimes they don't realize what a serious thing it is that they had a heart artery narrowing and had to have that opened. And so to understand, they need to understand that really to have a motivation to take the medications and the lifestyle changes that are necessary for the future. Most commonly, we advise, first of all, what we call behavioral modifications or lifestyle changes. So that includes things like diet. The changes necessary for a heart-healthy diet include reducing fats, reducing meat, trying to increase fresh food. Also, exercise. Most commonly, we recommend at the very minimum about 30 minutes of exercise that will break a light sweat at least 5 days out of the week. And then the medications are used to address the different, what we call cardiovascular disease risk factors. So medications to control blood pressure, medications to control cholesterol, and certainly medications to control related things such as diabetes. Poorly controlled diabetes, for example, can also exacerbate coronary artery disease. Probably the most concerning thing to us as physicians and cardiologists, especially taking care of cardiac patients, are the folks that continue to smoke. So smoking cessation is an extremely important part of what we call the secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease.
Dr. Amar Krishnaswamy is an interventional cardiologist in the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic, board certified in internal medicine, cardiology, and interventional cardiology. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
For more on angioplasty and Dr. Krishnaswamy, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org.
On next week's show, if your child is struggling with mental health issues, how do you navigate the system and get the help you need? A national mental health advocate and a parent who's been there have advice. Plus, vaccinations aren't just for kids anymore. Many adults are getting vaccinated, and it goes well beyond an annual flu shot. We'll talk to an expert from the Centers for Disease Control about the vaccinations they recommend for adults.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.